Senator Brown, would you help me until we get our vice chair?
Mr. Chair, I move to waive appearance and recommend the confirmation of the reappointment of Chet Carruthers to the State Apprenticeship and Training Council.
Senator Brown moves to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the reappointment of Chet Carruthers to the State Apprenticeship and Training Council. Is there any discussion, any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Courtney, if you please.
Mr. Chair, I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Larry Jones to the State Apprenticeship and Training Council.
Senator Courtney moves to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Larry Jones to the State Apprenticeship and Training Council. Is there any discussion, any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Brummel Haas to the Commission on Asian Affairs.
Senator Corley moves to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Brummel Haas to the Commission on Asian Affairs. Discussion, objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Brian Bice to the Oregon Disabilities Commission.
Senator Courtney moves to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Brian Bice to the Oregon Disabilities Commission. Discussion, objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Ralph Breitenstein to the State Board of Education.
Senator Courtney moves to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Ralph Breitenstein to the State Board of Education, one of my doctors. Is there any discussion? Objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Lindy Talbot to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission.
Senator Courtney moves to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Lindy Talbot to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Discussion? Objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Soon to see another opening in the very near soon in the future. Mr. Chair, I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Pamela Rosenkowski to the Oregon State Lottery Commission.
Senator Courtney moves to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the reappointment of Pamela Rosenkowski to the Oregon State Lottery Commission. How'd we do? Okay. Any discussion? Objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Chair, I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation in block of the appointments of David Bubb, Joseph Fentalen, and the reappointments of Marcia Dorm, Lisa Dotson, Judith Rice, and James Scott to State Board of Medical Examiners.
I bet we didn't do very good on that one.
Well, if you go quickly, you get
Senator Courtney moves to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation in block of the appointment of David Grube, Joseph Thaler, and the reappointments of Marcia Dorm, Lisa Dotson, Judith Rice, and James Scott to the State Board of Medical Examiners. Discussion, objection, hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation appointment of George Bell to State Parks and Recreation Commission.
Senator Courtney moves to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of George Bell to the State Parks and Recreation Commission. Discussion, objection, hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of Thomas Walsh to the Physical Therapist Licensing Board.
Senator Courtney moves to waive the appearance. Who else could have fun reading a bunch of names, you know? I mean, think about it. Lord, it doesn't get any better than this. Senator Courtney moves to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the reappointment of Thomas Morris to the Physical Therapist Licensing Board. Discussion, objection, hearing none, so forth.
Mr. Chair, I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of Rocky King, the public employee to be benefit for. Rocky.
Senator Courtney.
Rocky 1, Rocky 2.
To waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Rocky King.
Rocky 5.
The public employee's benefit board. Any discussion, any objection, hearing none, so ordered.
That was, you remember the movies, the Rocky, I was trying to do.
Yes.
Okay.
We figured that.
Mr. Chair, I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Dean Wendell to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission.
Senator Courtney moves to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Dean Wendell to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. Discussion, objection, hearing.
What is that?
I don't know.
Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis used to be the scholarship.
Oh, okay, all right.
Scholarship Commission? Okay. Any objection? Hearing none.
Mr. Chair, I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of Joanne Dewey to the Oregon State Veterinarian Medical Examining
Senator Courtney moves to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the reappointment of Joanne Dewey to the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. Discussion, objection, hearing none.
Mr. Chair, I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of C. Diane Jansen to the Workers' Compensation Management-Labor Advisory Committee.
Senator Cordy moves to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the appointment of C. Diane Jansen to the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee. Discussion, objection, hearing none, so ordered. We will close the executive reappointment and open a public hearing on, what's that, 752?
Oh.
On Senate Bill 752.
You know, I hate to tell you, folks, that is pure theater. I mean, I don't care. You take it for what it is. Evaluate it. You know, badmouth it. But that's theater. Well, no, you were part of it. That's theater.
You're good.
No. It was the team.
Central.
This is going to be in the archives one day. This is going to be in the archives, what just took place here.
I know.
Friend of Portland. Hi, Senator Miller. How are you today?
Well,
he just missed theater. We had a theater.
I heard it on the...
Senator Atkinson, would you like to take Senator...
What are you doing now? What are you doing now?
Whatever it was.
Love it.
You and Harper.
Oh, this is going to be... Oh,
this
is going to be special.
Yeah.
He didn't bring the gong.
Oh, I wish I had known this was coming.
Would you like me to have the gong, please?
The gong-y.
The gong-y.
The gong-y. If you keep it up, you'll be the gong or.
Chairman, committee members, for the record, my name's State Senator Jason Atkinson. The bill before you, Senate Bill 752, is intended to open a general discussion about the time in which we hear the primary before the general election. Let me tell you briefly how I got to become interested in this. I'm interested in this foremost from a campaign finance reform standpoint, having been around campaigns and the cash flow timing of campaigns. Essentially, I think we have a system that costs too much and is disconnected between what happens in the springtime and the fall time. I also think that it's fairly interesting that we would be hearing this bill in a day in which I believe the same topic is being discussed through McCain-Feingold in the United States Senate, so it's very timely. Campaigns, I think I'd open my remarks by saying campaigns are, the way I always describe them to people who I work with, that campaigns are nothing but giant going out of business sales. At a certain time, you will be out of business. So you want to get rid of everything as you're going out of business. So what happens, to run for this job, you spend about a year of your life preparing to going out of business sales. You have what happens where everybody sizes themselves up and they try to figure out who's a candidate, who's not a candidate in the fall. They try to raise money from their constituents in the winter. They try to spend that money between the filing deadline in March and the actual race, end of the race in May. So you have your first going out of business sale. The problem is that most Oregonians, I would contend, probably aren't paying all that much attention to what happens in the primary. In fact, I would contend that Oregonians perhaps pay less attention because it's on like their kids' school calendar. Everyone's waiting for the primaries to get over, politics to get done, see what happens to whatever initiatives, hot initiatives or not so hot initiatives, are calling attention to the fact that there is an election at that time, and then trying to get the kids off to school. So what happens is, we all know, is once those primary elections are over, that the campaign stops in June and July in August. And then what happens? We have to run a completely different startup and going out of business sale, right? It's one full year. So my idea to bringing this forward is, what happens if you didn't have two ramp-up periods? What happens if you actually move the primary to what our neighboring state to the north does by moving the primary date to the first Tuesday in September? In essence, you ramp up once, the winner of the primary proceeds about a month and a half later to the general election, and then we keep going. So essentially, you have a pre-sale and then a going out of business sale. And during the course of campaigning, would that save money? And the answer is, with the cost of campaigns that you have today, I believe that would save just pure old basic cash flow timing of what it takes to run a campaign, we'd save money. I've always found it highly ironic that Oregonians have asked for campaign finance reform, but then fell in love with vote-by-mail. Vote-by-mail, from a candidate standpoint, drives a price up 25 to 30% higher. So how do you take vote-by-mail and make it work in this election, or in this particular idea? I'm sure you're going to hear testimony of why this might not work, but if we just be creative here for a minute, and we were able to send the ballots out in under the some amendments that I have drafted here, I'll explain the bill more in detail, but if you were allowed the ballots to go out in mid-August to have a collection date in the first Monday in September, have the decision made, and then you have to essentially the trick to doing this is getting the turnaround time between the printing of the general election voters pamphlet and getting those ballots back out in October, mid-October. Is that right? Somebody nod with me. That's about right. 3 weeks. So that becomes the issue. But I leave you with the premise that I think we can take some of the money out of politics if we just shorten up these two essentially going out of business sales into one. And so that is why I've brought it to your attention. It would need, obviously, I have some dash one amendments that don't exactly accomplish what I just said as far as naming dates in August and in May, or excuse me, in September. But that's what my interest is. And with that, colleagues, so I don't get gonged, because I didn't bring the gong for you to gong me with, I will be more than happy to have this splendid conversation with you all.
Senator Brown.
Good. So Senator Atkinson, I have a couple questions, and that is dealing with the recount status and my now infamous election of May of 1992, which was also the same time that Harry Lonsdale came within 300 votes kicking out Lesa Coyne in the Democratic primary for U.S. Senate. So I needed to wait basically 29 days for Multnomah County to do my recount because they were doing Harry Lonsdale's and Lesa Coyne's recount. How would we do that given the time frame which you had described?
That's a brilliant question, Senator Brown. I would say two thoughts. I would, in that case, I think the decision you'd have to make is, if you look at that question backwards, could you essentially put out, if there wasn't a clear winner at the time you needed to get that general election voters pamphlet out, could you put both of them out at the same time? And then could you communicate that only, you know, essentially if there was two candidates, the decision on the ballot would be between the two primary winners, not just the two that are of the same party. So could you put out the voters pamphlet with two Republicans or with two Democrats that where it hadn't been clearly delineated who won at that point? Could you get over that timing deadline? You probably could. As far as quickness of recounts, I don't know. I would hate, I think that now that we've gone through one serious cycle of recounts, one serious full cycle of vote by mail, that there's probably some efficiencies that we're going to be able to make. For instance, I would think, but I'm not certain, but I would think that centralized voter files and simplifying all the processes, I think that all will get streamlined over time. And I think this would work. But as far as specifics, I don't know. I mean, look at where Senator Harper represents, and he has multiple counties doing it multiple different ways. And so as we move as a state towards having a unified system of counting and ballots and what the ballots look like and how they go out and whatnot, I think we eventually get over that hurdle.
Wasn't one of the ideas a single voter's pamphlet to cover the primary in general? Is that that's an idea that I've heard kicked
save
around.
Save money, save trees.
Save money, save trees. Yeah.
That is in the
bill. You know, again, my issue on this whole thing is, I mean, just looking at it from a campaign standpoint, how much money we spend in a primary election that just stops, goes nowhere. If you look at how Washington State does it, they get this thing over much quicker, essentially on the same nickel.
What date do they do?
I'm not sure. I think it's right around the first week. Maybe somebody behind me would know exactly, but I think it's the first week in September. It's pretty, it happens, you know, they have this early fall election and then the general election. It's pretty quick.
Senator Miller.
And your amendments, you are moving the
date up? Yes. Yeah. It was drafted.
Spacing between the primary and the general?
Excuse me, Senator?
The reason to change the dates you had in your earlier draft?
I think the earlier draft, if I recall correctly, had it as the third Tuesday, and I want it the first Tuesday in September.
Does that work with
Labor Day? Does it matter with Labor Day and people maybe coming home and trying to sort through that?
I don't know.
Great photos and honest state virtues. And
you know,
kids in school and
I don't know if that becomes that much of a, you know, again, to look at the same strategic question from a campaign standpoint the other way, do you have those same kinds of holidays in a 3-week window, what we have right now with vote by mail? I can't think of anything in May, but there is some there's some minor holidays and big weekends and 3-day weekends that also play into that voting window. As long as that voting window is that wide, that's the thing we don't understand now. We used to think that we had a U-shaped curve as far as ballot returns, where a lot came in early and then it was low for about 10 days and then a lot came in at the end. Well, around the state, we can't really predict that. Sometimes it's this way, sometimes it's a buildup. And I don't know since we have such a wide window, If a holiday weekend essentially on that last couple of days affects it all that greatly. I'm not sure the answer. I don't think anybody knows.
Well, vote by mail changes the dynamic, obviously, but that probably is the first day of the Tuesday after the Monday of Labor Day. It isn't a lot of districts.
Yeah, it's typical.
Maybe that's cause
wouldn't this
celebrate all day. You put your kid back in school and then you celebrate the candidacy at night.
Wouldn't have to be a Tuesday. It could be a Friday. Traditionally, has been a Tuesday.
Or you could get rid of vote by mail and take them to school and vote at the same time. Sorry, I just couldn't.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Where's the gong?
Where's the gong?
Jason, you've had, this is your bill. You've had discussions. Give us some other positive reasons for this. We've got the campaign finance. I think that's crystal clear to me. But what other things crop up?
Well. I, for me personally, I mean, I look at it just from the cost sides of campaigns. I mean, I've made that point, but I think that's, for me, that's the most important point. The second part of it is the sense that I think Oregonians on a primary election routine that we have right now it's harder to educate people about their involvement in politics in May. Let them have summer break, essentially, from politics, where they take their kids and whatever, because I believe that Oregonians, there was a poll taken about 10 years ago that said, what do Americans value? And the number two thing that we value is our free time. Well, in Oregon, summer, we really value our free time. So we have people who pay attention marginally to politics in May, and then we try to ramp them back up in the fall. By putting these two together, kids are going back to school, you're going to pay attention, I hope, to what we're communicating in primaries, and then carry that through for essentially another however many days that is until the general. So I think there's a good faith element. I think there's an education element. I think there is a cost savings element, which I'm really interested in. And then I think there's a credibility element. I mean, I remember, I'm a grassroots campaigner, you know, doorbell, doorbell, doorbell. Well, I go back to somebody's house again in the fall, didn't I just vote for you? Yes, that was, we've all had those experiences of educating people what the primary is and that, yes, you have to vote for us, please, one more time. In the general, I think if you bring I think it does a lot for how people view their civics lesson of going through an election by shortening up together.
How about the minus column? What have you heard that
makes this a bad idea?
Well, I think the minus column is, at this point, from what I've heard, is the difficulty of trying to make this work with vote by mail, one. Two, the situations where what Senator Brown was talking about with it not being clearly delineated in a primary who wins, who loses. The printing costs, if we can't get that streamlined from a state standpoint of multiple of the voter's pamphlet and getting those turned around within that timeline to get them out. And then also there's one other one. I don't know how this, I have LC wrote me an interest. Maybe perhaps they could come by and talk about it, about initiative petitions on the primary for proposed state measures. There's some issues there with how those fall into play. Without going through all that, I'll let them go through all that. But there is some, when do we know if somebody has achieved enough signatures to have an issue get on the ballot or not, the timing of that. To which my response is, leave those on the, not to advocate for a third election, but leave those in the spring and just do candidates in the fall, which at that point the negative could be price prohibitive, but I don't, those are the issues.
Senator Menace?
Well, I just, the issue of voter's pamphlet statements can be overcome to some extent by posting the voter's pamphlet statement on the Internet. And I think as more and more people have access to the Internet and web pages become more usable, I think you can minimize the cost of printing the voter's pamphlet statements, the heavy documents, and save postage by allowing people to, I don't know how you do this on their own motion when they register to vote or whatever, to receive the voter's pamphlet statement via the Internet as opposed to actually having a physical copy sent to them. But I think that where that's possible, we ought to at least look at that. The other thing is, it seems to me like this is a good thing to do, that there are a lot of technical issues and such, and I guess my suggestion is send all the certified smart people that care about this off in a big corner and have them come back with a consensus bill that works.
Isn't that what we have?
Or no?
Easy.
Well, I'm going into a work session here.
I'm ready to go to work.
I'm ready to move the bill.
I think it's, to that issue, two things. I think, as far as technology goes, I think it plays in our favor, especially as we start to streamline across the state, vote by mail. That plays in our favor. The information age plays in our favor. Bigger computers that can count faster with bigger cells for spreadsheets plays in our favor. I mean, the timing of this issue perhaps being discussed 20 years ago without vote by mail might have had other implications that it clearly doesn't have today. And if you look at what people are interested in, as far as their faith in us as their leaders, is the fact that a lot of people across the board, both sides of the party, will say this costs too much. You guys just, the money element for essentially $1,200 a month job, which what we're doing here as their state senators, is just a little bit. I think we add a lot of faith I think there's a lot of goodness that comes by pushing the process together, both in terms of cash flow and lessening that influence, but also in terms of building faith between people getting active civically.
Thank you.
Getting back up here and get to work.
Yes, sir.
Fred, Neil. Yes,
all
okay.
And company.
Fred's here, Fred.
So Fred's going to tell us how we can do this.
Are you?
Yeah. Are you guys going to be a role?
I want to hear this.
Yeah.
I like that. Vicki, start with the concerns, and then we'll talk about some technical issues.
Is that all right, Mr. Chair?
She may.
I'd be delighted.
Pleasure is. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Vicki Irvin. I'm the Director of Elections in Multnomah County. And I'm here today in opposition to the bill as drafted. I have not seen amendments, but I want to talk about the bill as it's drafted. In November, our country saw a lot of things happening with our election in the state of Florida as it happened. And there were a lot of lessons there to be learned. And it seems to me in looking at the draft of this bill that a lot of those lessons are lost on it. and I want to kind of go through those. For instance, recounts. Senator Brown has already mentioned this. People are very concerned about recounts. Many times through the process, I said to myself, how could they do a recount before they finished the first count? And yet that is exactly what this legislation would require us to do, or not have a recount at all, because there simply isn't time. Another issue that was brought up was that of military voters and the concern that military voters might have been disenfranchised. Under the bill as drafted, we would be cutting almost a full week off of the transit time available for military and overseas voters to get their ballots and return them. The third is, it was real clear that voters wanted the winners determined before they were declared. And under the bill as drafted, the Secretary of State would have to say who the winners were to go on to the general ballot before we'd have a chance to finish counting, auditing, and certifying the primary election. The fourth was real clear that voters didn't want to be confused, and there was a lot of confusion. And granted, in Florida, it focused more on how you register your vote on the particular ballot. But I think it's true that voters don't want to be confused, period. And I can't blame them. But when you look at the timing of the bill and the election as drafted, certainly we would have the potential confusion as state ballot measure campaigns are going to kick off, as they always do, right after Labor Day. You're going to have lots of perhaps mail, certainly radio ads, TV ads for state ballot measure campaigns, and yet when voters get their ballot, those measures aren't going to be there. And there's going to be confusion because you've got overlapping campaign periods. And finally, I think voters want integrity in the process. They want to be sure that when it's done and it's over, that it is accurate and that it was done with integrity. And what I would see with the bill, the way it is drafted, is that everything is either short-coupled or eliminated so much that, in fact, that would begin to erode that level of confidence that voters could have. Now, these are kind of a framework just to kind of look at legislation and judge whether or not we've learned things from that general election. But my objections actually are more down to earth because I'm an elections administrator, and so I'm concerned about some specifics in the bills. There are things in there that are humanly impossible. For instance, as drafted, the bill requires us to mail out ballots to our military and overseas on the same day that we find out what's on the ballot. You can't do that. It just can't be done. That's only one example, and there are many, many examples of problems that are in there. Let's call them challenges instead of problems to the logistics of conducting an election. Now, if the purpose of the legislation is to somehow move the primary closer to the general election, does this mean it can't be done? Well, no, of course not. It can be done. But I think what you have to realize is that there are trade-offs and there are consequences to every date that you pick. A lot of them surface just in your discussion already. What about the holiday? What about Labor Day? What about this? What about that? There are lots of those. So I guess what I would like to say is that I hope the committee will move very slowly and carefully on this, and that if you decide that you want to go forward, that we'll have a chance to have some input so that we can help identify what those issues are so you can clearly see the consequences and the trade-offs. I thank you very much, and I'm available to answer questions.
Senator Barr.
I guess she does want us to move it today.
She's going to ask.
Vicki, Washington State's been doing this for a long time. Are you familiar with how they do it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, no, I'm not exactly. I know that they have different sorts of scenarios than we do. One of the things, for instance, on their military voters, and I don't know what their deadline is to mail out military ballots, but they accept absentee and military ballots for a full, I believe, 10 days after the election. In other words, what they lop off on the front end for mailing it out, they've added on to the tail end. And that's one of the trade-offs. I do know that in this last election cycle that there were major problems and concerns in the state of Washington because they had, I believe, a ballot measure that was tied up in a lawsuit, and they couldn't go forward with their general election, and they were running out of time, and it created all kinds of problems.
It seems like the ballot, I realize this isn't there, but the ballot measure issue seems like if that was the concern rather than the candidate races, which I think is what Senator Atkinson is focusing on here, we could change the law, change the Constitution if we need to, move all ballot measures to November so that wouldn't tie up your printing issues and we were only talking about candidates. There's nothing magical about doing initiatives in May.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I would agree. I think there are ways to address these. But the bill as drafted doesn't accomplish that because it takes our current framework and just tries to sort of manipulate and change the dates. I don't think you can do it that way. I think it requires a new way to look at it. Perhaps all of the filings for the primary and the general have to come in 85 days before the election, rather than waiting until the primary is over before the rest of the filings for the general come in. Things like that. But they're going to take some focus and some creative thinking to figure out how are you going to address the concerns that are raised in the bill as drafted.
Yeah, I think, you know, the purpose of the bill is clear. It's to get these things as close together as makes good sense.
You know exactly what that is, right, Senator Atkinson?
Right.
I mean, that's the purpose of the bill, so how you make that fit is the question. Senator Minnis?
Do we know, a question for whomever might have the answer, but does the candidates of Washington spend less money per vote than Oregon? Does anybody know?
They have contribution limits and expenses.
I would doubt it. And, well, I guess we could take a stab at that. I know that the media market in Seattle costs more than the media market in Portland. I think the only way to compare that would be to look at Eastern Oregon and Eastern Washington, the media market just in battle.
It's going to be a tough apple-to-apple comparison to me, I would think, but
you're doing size of market.
Yeah.
You're buying an awful lot of advertising in Seattle.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Do they have term limits for anywhere?
Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, Fred Neal. My understanding is that the state of Washington has contribution limits and spending limits.
How do you do that?
And prohibited contributions as well. So it would be an apple orange comparison.
Well, go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Mr. Chair, sort of just a follow-up to, I think, Senator Minnis' question. It's basically sort of giving another analogy when I asked Becky Miller of Taxpayers United, they didn't want to have the quarterly filings of the CNEs because she said it would quadruple the amount of work that they would do by only filing annually. This is your assumption is by shortening the time frame, people would spend less money because you have you don't have the education, the summer break gap. Yeah. I don't know whether that's true or not.
Oh, I think so. You can only
but
buy
it's certainly a good argument. I mean, I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying that's something to take a look at. But simply by shortening the time frame, do you in fact spend less money?
That's
maybe you spend more because you have more time to raise.
I would.
I don't know.
Go ahead, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Fred Neal. I'm one of the managers for the Elections Division for the Secretary of State. We're not here to take a position on this measure except to point out, to reinforce that there are some technical and logistical problems inherent in the bill as introduced. Senator Atkinson's amendments address really only two issues. One is that it precludes, gives two more weeks to the span between a primary election in September and the November general, at all times rather than putting it on the third Tuesday unless it's less than 49 days before. And we appreciate that extra 2 weeks, but it still doesn't address some of the issues that are inherent in, for instance, the initiative process, where the deadline for filing those is in the Constitution, and it's prescribed to be 4 months before the general election in which they're voted. In Washington, you'll remember, their initiative referendum process is far different than ours, and that the signatures must be submitted far in advance, and the legislature gets a crack at looking at those and deciding if they want to adopt it or put on a competing measure, et cetera. And so it's they've got really kind of an 18-month lead time, I think, on their September primary, November general, even-numbered year initiative measure elections. Whereas we're still caught with the Constitution, and as a bill, this can't amend the Constitution or propose amendment to the people. That does raise some issues that I believe legislative counsel may have also apprised Senator Atkinson of what is a measure that is going to appear on the general election ballot to trigger measure arguments. and the explanatory and fiscal impact statement process. The bill does not change that to mean just all of the petitions have been filed for signature verification. So we'd still be hinging on that issue of, okay, what's been certified? Well, the deadline for that, for instance, is for next year, if this measure were in effect, would be August 2nd, with the signatures, the petitions being submitted July 5th. Committees in support or in opposition to those measures, but they're not measures, they're just petitions. While we've got 30 days to figure out whether they have enough signatures, would have to file their arguments for or against on July 9th. The bill does provide for a single voter's pamphlet, and it provides enough, with the filing deadlines that it prescribes, enough time to file and produce and distribute the voter's pamphlet before the September election that covers both the September and the general election. So we appreciate that in the bill, but that raises some issues, again, about voter confusion, because this single voter's pamphlet is going to cover measures that have been referred by the legislature, for instance, or by referendum petition to both the and initiative initiated measures on both the primary and the general. But there'll be both measures and be voted on in September and measures to be voted on in November in the same voters pamphlet, as well as candidates who will not appear on the general election ballot, but will because they either lost the nomination in the major party primary, or they gathered more than 50% in a nonpartisan local race and were able to be declared the winner without proceeding to the general election ballot. So those are some of the issues that are raised by the measure. We're happy to sit down with any number of legislators and staff to look at how to reach something that's logistically capable of implementation, and would certainly have major issues with the bill as drafted at this point.
Senator Beyer?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Fred, I think you may have just answered my question. It sounds like you're saying the bill as it's drafted needs some work, but if the legislature wants to go to September primary, the elections officials can figure out a way to do it.
Are we ready to make that?
You may not like it.
You may want to, Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, you may want to consider an August primary.
Well, of course you can do September.
Well, they don't necessarily successfully do a September in all cases. If you want to, especially with issues of recount and contest of elections, a September primary is not going to address those.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, my comment there is that, yes, we can do a September primary, but there are going to be an awful lot of things that you're accustomed to now that are going to go away. And that's what you have to realize is there are consequences and there are trade-offs. And those are the issues, not can you do an election in September as a primary.
Maybe the question is, you know, and I don't expect an answer now, the question is, okay, if you want to do it, here's what we need to do differently to get there.
Yes. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with that last comment. This is somewhat reminiscent of hearings that we have on self-service gas.
We haven't had any, nor are we.
Not in this committee. But I just tell you, you know, you hear every conceivable problem and how the world will end, and then you reflect for a moment that 48 other states allow the activity. In this case, we've got our neighbor to the north that allows this activity, and all of these horror stories that are being related, somehow their citizens are surviving, and I don't know, I'm not aware that they're trying to pattern their election system after ours.
Yeah, they are.
You think they are?
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, yes, we get calls all the time from Secretary of State's office, from Washington election officials. The citizens don't know us well enough to call us.
We hear about today. When I hear that, I'd be so confused that one ballot issue is in the primary and one ballot
over 40%
absentee. And give them half a break. You know, I think they can probably discern the difference. And you could probably label it in the voter's pamphlet. These are primary, these are general. I think most people who vote can read. Now, maybe that's...
Can I fire? Just a comment, you know, I think there are two good reasons to do this. There may be a dozen technically why not, but two really good reasons. One is the one that Senator Atkins put on the table, which I really do think that given all the restrictions we have and the free speech provisions of both the U.S. and the Oregon Constitution, there ain't much we can do about campaign finance reform. This is probably the best shot we got to reduce the expenditures. Not that it will, but it's the best shot we got. The other one that I think is more important is the comments that I've gotten the last couple of election cycles. And I wasn't on the ballot last time, but I heard particularly from elderly people complaining about they just don't understand why they're inundated in the spring and then in the fall by elections and the mood, frankly, if you're out there walking this stuff, when people are ready to hear the message, is frankly after Labor Day. That's when they're ready to start thinking seriously about it, which may argue a little bit against Labor Day being the day you vote, but if there's some way we could get to the second week, and I don't think there's anything magical about a Tuesday, that would be great. I think the public, more important than anything else, the public would appreciate narrowing in when you do the election business.
Well, Mr. Chair, we were not... by any means here to try to kill this bill or suggest that it wasn't possible to amend it to make it work. What Vicki clearly made it clear that things will look different, and you may not, even as committee members looking at the bill as introduced, understand necessarily what all those consequences are, and so we're just here to make sure that you have, at least you're going into this with some eyes open, that there are ancillary or even, consequences, some of which may indeed go to the initiative and referendum process and public and chief petitioner expectations about what their options are and their ability to persuade the voters are. But those are all things that we just need to sit around a table and identify and look to optimal solutions.
You know, we've been doing it this way for 150 years. I don't expect to turn this
right
in an hour period. I give us at least 3 hours.
We're much relieved.
All right. Jim Nass. Is that right, Jim? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jim Nass, legal counsel for the appellate courts.
Welcome to the capital.
Thank you. My focus is extremely narrow. If you'll turn in your hymnals to page 31, section 70 of this bill proposes a means of contesting elections, and that lines 21 and 22 provides that the petition to contest an election can be filed either in the circuit court or Supreme Court. The last sentence of this section says the decision of the court shall be the first and final decision. I suspect that means, if that's the only choice a would-be elected person has, that most, if not all, of those challenges will be filed in my court. A 7-member Supreme Court is ill-suited to entertain what is often a very fact-intensive trial. So we would implore you, please, to excise those 7 words at lines 21 and 22. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. The Supremes object.
Perhaps I should add, if you want to have some means of expedited Supreme Court review of a circuit court decision, that's something that we have done in other bills, and we can talk about what form that would take. But to have this filed in our court in the first instance and have an appellate court, 7 members, conduct a trial just doesn't work.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all the people we have signed up. Anybody else want to? Joe?
Good Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Gillian with the Oregon Grocery Industry Association. Not to get too far into the details, I see as they're changing, I have not seen these amendments yet to the bill, but the discussion over bringing the elections closer together is something that I believe our group has an interest in. From many of the reasons that the Senator, Senator Atkinson stated, in bringing the two closer together and trying to get at a more functional cash flowing, if you will, of elections that make more sense and reduce the need for the high dollars. Our current system eats up a lot of dollars the way it's set up because of the length of time between two elections. And just as you have to raise more money, those out there with political action committees have to raise more money. And while some of you may object to the trickle-down theory of economics, it is truly in the works in this game. And it makes it more and more difficult for the average citizen to participate with the kind of numbers you have to raise to sustain a campaign. In addition to that, the other factor of the mail-in ballot, rather than having a campaigns that we run that culminated in a 24-hour election day, and you built everything going into that, we now build about, 20 days out, and then we have to sustain that level for 20 days. And that's for any party, any group, doesn't matter, in order for you to sustain your activity with the voter who may or may not have made a decision. And this long period from May until November, and then the mail-in ballots, you end up, the cost of campaigns go up. And I think this deserves a lot of thought and process to see if there's a way to bring them closer together and maybe maximize citizens' dollars that they put into campaigns to support their candidates, so it's not strung out too long.
I don't view this politically as to having an advantage or disadvantage of one side or the other. Am I missing something, or is it, I don't think so. I mean, politically, it's going to be an advantage for both parties or a disadvantage for both parties. So, is that the read?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, that's...
So if Mr. Gilliam says he's going to be giving less money as a result of this legislation, I can tell you there will be a certain benefit to certain parts.
Okay.
Sorry, just had to put that in there.
Glad to be here before you today, sir.
Do you have actually a question? Joe, there's been some discussion up here about that voters will get confused in terms of the initiative process and the candidate process all on top of each other. And I guess just wanted to get your thoughts. We could put the initiative, we could actually have the general election for the initiative process be in May and have the fall time be for the candidates. What do you think of that? Do you have some other thoughts? Well,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
There I was in the Congo. Now, Senator Brown, I guess we're open to any discussion, any thoughts on that. We don't want to confuse the voters. We don't want to make any, change is going to always be tough in this area. But I think you're getting to a point where you're escalating the cost that I think looking at anything like that, taking out the initiatives in a different time and putting in candidates, I think that merits a lot of discussion. If in the overall picture, in a broad picture, you're doing this that doesn't disadvantage any particular group or party, and you are, I just think your goal has to be to lay out a better, more efficient spending for campaigns. Because the way we're doing now is just escalating so high that it excludes a lot of people.
Senator Beyer.
Just an observation. I would agree that people, particularly on the initiative campaigns and others, would have to change their thinking once. But it seems like it's a one-time adjustment. Once you make the adjustment, that's just part of the timing after that.
Until we meet again.
Until we meet again. Well, I won't do that.
Yeah.
You only have to train the media once, too.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Fascinating. What do you guys want to do with this thing?
Let's have a work group.
Let's have a work group.
Urban's the chair.
Let's have a work group that...
Yeah.
With the direction to find a way to do it.
I don't have the housework, huh?
You don't have a good track record.
go in the work session and have the House fix some minor technical problems with it. And then the purpose of the work group is to do
make
what?
Make it happen.
Make it happen in September. Okay? Who's on that besides Atkinson?
I think Senator Atkinson is chairing that with Secretary of State's office, isn't he?
Okay. And since Senator Breyer and Senator Atkinson have developed such a wonderful
working relationship, I think it's obviously okay.
What is this, punishment for doing something well?
He's the chair on this one, and you're the vice chair. How's that? Okay.
I would suggest that you maybe incorporate someone from the House also.
Yeah, I think
this bill.
Grab whoever we want to. Okay.
Right.
We got a somewhat fast train now. We have a huge pile. We did this once some years back, Ed. Is that what you're telling us?
It's a good idea.
Okay. How many? When did we do that, Fred? What?
95.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Did I do that?
He's forgotten you. So you got a ton of info.
There's a reason why you wouldn't let me involved.
Okay, well, let's press ahead. We do have time limits on this. We need it done correctly, but we do need it done. So
2 weeks?
A couple weeks.
By Friday?
Yeah. Well, we meet Thursday. Okay, yeah. I'll give you the weekend, so a couple weeks. Okay? With that, we close the public hearing on Senate Bill 752 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2580.
Did you have that one before?
Maybe the 95.
Is that your bill?
Can I leave it to the kid?
All right, John Marshall, Charles, Scott.
Go ahead.
And Hasina, you're on deck.
No more school finance bills, John.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, my name is Charles Stern. I'm Yamhill County Clerk, and I chair the Oregon Association of County Clerks Legislative Committee. House Bill 2580 was introduced at the request of our association in an attempt to improve the focus of the public on the director elections for special districts on the odd-numbered year. We feel this is a very important tasks that these volunteers take upon them to become directors in special districts. Under the current law, the process of verifying those positions which are to be elected in the regular district election begins in November during the general election activity. Also, the filing period for candidates to circulate nominating petitions is during the December holiday period. And we believe that this current schedule contributes to the lack of candidate filings for district offices. The current filing is also at a time when the media is still focused on stories about the general election and the activities of the holiday season. And it's usually only as we approach that filing deadline that we start to see stories about the open positions available for prospective district elections. Moving the regular election from March of the odd-numbered year, to May of the odd-numbered year would move the filing and notice period for candidates for district boards of directors to after the holiday season. It would move the regular district election filing a period away from the competing with the general election media coverage. It would create some uniformity on when voters vote for candidates from March of the odd year to May of the odd year, because in May of the even year, they're voting for state and county candidates, unless the bill that preceded this passes. but nevertheless, it moves them to the concept of voting in May. And so we feel that uniformity can help with this. This bill does not remove March as an election date from the elections calendar. That's still available for measures. It does not change the term of district directors, which start in July of the odd year. And it does not move the director election into competition with any other special election. Being circulated, I believe, is a calendar that I've developed that shows the dates for the various activities that go on, and you can kind of see the overlapping activity between the general election, the election in which districts are to respond to the clerk for the March election, and to when candidates have to be filed by January 11th for this current election cycle that we just finished, and when that would be changed if they would be running in a May election cycle. In the election we just finished for March, in Yamhill County, we had 49 contests. 10 of them were contested and 2 of them with no filings at all. And I'm sure if you remember looking at your ballots that you received for this last March election, just over with, there were, you kind of wonder sometimes, you know, where is everybody at that wanted to hold this office? And of course, if you've been a school board or a fire board member, maybe you know why they're not there. But it's an important office, and we think we need to get the higher focus attention and media attention on that, on running for that office. Be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Charles. Just for your benefit, people that are testifying, this passed the House 48-0.
Anybody sign in opposition?
Actually, we do have one. So. Okay.
Chair Harper, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Tye. I'm the operations manager for the elections division. And basically, I'm left with just reiterating what Charles has finally presented. But my testimony would have been the same thing as Charles said, that simply move what the intent of the bill is to move the election of district board candidates to the May election. And one of the reasons that I would like to support Charles's testimony on is a number of times in my office we receive calls from people, prospective candidates, who miss the filing deadline because it's lost in the hype and the excitement of the November election and the holidays, where they miss the notice for publishing a notice for election. And they miss the filing period, and they'll call up and ask if there's anything the Secretary of State can do to extend that filing period. And obviously, you know, our position would be a deadline's a deadline, and we're sorry that you missed that filing period, but there's nothing that we can do about it. And over the 8 years that I've been with the Elections Division, we routinely get calls like that where people have missed the deadline. But by moving the election of candidates to May, I think that will allow the publishing of notices of elections to occur after the holidays, where the people would have a greater opportunity to file for office. Again, the March election would allow for districts to continue to place measures on the ballot, and that election will still be available. And other than that, I think I can't add anything to the testimony. Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to take any questions.
So those people can't read a calendar, but they want to run for public office. Don't go there.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Marshall, representing the School Boards Association, as the organization that represents the boards of 198 school districts, 21 education service districts, and 17 community colleges. We're appearing in support of House Bill 2580 for the reasons previously stated.
Okay. Thank you. Athena. Did you give this same testimony in the House? that we're going to get today?
Mr. Chair, yes, fairly.
I see it was very successful.
It was. It was one of my very most successful times. So this is, in fact, the best I've ever done on a piece of legislation. I'm just thrilled with myself. I'm actually going to frame this piece of legislation when it's done. Mr. Chair, I do have to correct. I think that it was only 43 I votes, and the rest were excused, not 48. So you don't want to, you know, make it worse for me than it already is, unfortunately. I'm here today on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon and the Oregon Fire District Directors Association, which consists of 1,500 elected officials throughout the state of Oregon, in opposition to this legislation. We did a survey of 33 of the 36 counties for this election cycle, and of the positions that were available for special district board members to file for, 85% of those were filled. So while we appreciate the focus, the attempt to focus more on special district elections, we think that there's enough focus of the election in March. 85% of them were filled, so only 15% of the seats for special district elections were vacant. 40% of those 85% were contested races, and some of them had up to 3 and 4 people challenging each other for a special district election. And so we think that 85% of the people signing up are, even despite the fact that it's a holiday, occurring over the holiday. January 11th was the deadline to file for district election office, and 85% of the people who wanted to run for boards did so. This, if you look at the chart that Mr. Stern handed out, this election filing date change would move it to spring break, 22nd. It's spring break for some people. So a holiday is a holiday. If people want to run for office, they will file. They will know when to file, and they'll file despite the fact that there's a holiday. So we don't see that as a compelling argument. We also heard testimony on the House side that this will not save any special districts or school districts any money. It also will not save any time or effort for the county clerks. It would only save a district money if they were putting a concurrent measure on the ballot, as it would today in March. So we really don't think that this is necessary. We enjoy our elections to be held in March, and we really don't feel that it would be necessary. If this legislation passed, we'll have to educate all of the people who do currently choose to file for office and run that now they will file for May election instead of the March election.
What is the downside to going to May? Well, what's bad about that, just from your perspective?
You know, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's the whole thing. This bill is just one of those. You could argue it either way. There's really no downside other than having to re-educate people that now all district candidates will be elected in May. There's really no compelling argument to not have it in March, though, either.
Not the voter participation rate.
That is a very compelling argument. Unfortunately, that's not one that the proponents chose to make. The voter participation in May is about at least twice. It's twice and sometimes a little bit less. So, if you move this election date to May, you would get twice as many people voting on this.
Would that be better for your elections, higher participation rate?
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, yeah, that's a very compelling argument. It wasn't one made by the proponents.
Okay, so you're in support of this bill now?
You know, if the legislature, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if the intent of the legislature is to move the election date to increase voter participation in district elections, that is something that I can sell to the association's membership.
Right.
Improving the focus by shifting the election date when we were not consulted on this legislation when it was being developed is not something that I can sell to the Special Districts Association about why this is a good bill.
So you're in opposition because you're in a little bit of twit.
Representative Harper, or Senator Harper, I am not in a twit whatsoever. We're talking 43-0 here. How could I be in a twit?
You said you did a survey and...
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, we did do a survey of the... We were able to contact 33 of the 36 counties. And of the positions open for special district board elections, 85% of those slots that were available for someone to run for, 85% of them, somebody was running in one of those slots.
The question, then, in order to generate the position of opposition, did you survey your members?
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, yes, we did. And we had a number of concerns from particularly the Fire District Directors Association and their elected officials who have been
my goodness, filing for this office. I've been on that board for 15 years, and there's no reason for this. And the reasons given by the county clerks, they just didn't buy into. The voter participation increase, they did buy into.
Would I be right in thinking that 100% of the members who opposed this were elected under the current system? And did you survey anyone who wasn't?
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, no, because, no. No, we didn't do that. Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, I'd be happy to come back next session and give you a survey of all those people that will be elected in May and see how they feel about it, if you'd like.
I want to take back your members. Is the purpose of this bill is to increase voter participation, make a better democracy. How's that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you.
I'm sorry.
I'm just curious. Is it really turnout higher in May?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, yes.
What did we get in March? What did we get in this last one?
It was pretty awful.
It really varies county to county. In Clackamas County, the March election for 1999 had 20% turnout and 27% turnout from May. In 1997, it was even, but that was the ballot measure 50 rewrite that was on the ballot. Increased the participation significantly in that May election. I have some others, if you're interested, in Lane County. In the March election of 1999, 14% voter turnout, and in May, 51.8%. But again...
It's because there was something on the ballot.
Well...
Yeah, cut up to 14 because they're real excited about that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, despite that fact, I still believe that the participation would be a higher turnout, even if there was no Measure 7 and Measure 47.
For the record, that's the purpose of the bill. Okay, with that, we are ready to close the public hearing on Senate Bill or House Bill 2580.
Aye.
Open the work session on 2580.
Move the floor.
Senator Brown moves House Bill 2580 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Brown would be delighted to carry that.
Well, we just about eliminated the election day. I don't think there's anything else left there.
We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 777. Richard, you'd be first. 777, which is a big airplane, and 747, which is a big airplane. This is kind of classy, I think. Yeah. That was pretty clever.
See if they can get off the ground, Mr. Chair.
What for the airplane bills? Somebody called 777 the jackpot bill. For the record, my name is Richard Burke. I'm speaking today as a member of the State Committee of the Libertarian Party, not in my context as a legislative assistant. Little background, I've been involved with minor party politics since 1990. I actually testified in the hearings in 1993, which resulted in the current laws we have governing major and minor parties. I ran for governor in 1998, came in third out of seven with a whopping 2% of the vote.
More than anybody here got.
Yeah. I also managed the Mitch Schultz for State Treasurer campaign, which got 4% of the vote in the last cycle, and I've run successfully for office three times as a nonpartisan candidate. I tell you that just to let you know that I've been at this for a while, and I've seen current law work, and so now I'll offer the following testimony. Under current law, a minor political party comes into existence in an electoral district by submitting petitions to the Secretary of State. The petition must contain a number of valid signatures of registered voters in that district equal to or greater than 1.5% of those who voted for governor in the last election. To retain minor party status, two things must be done. A minor party must register a number of voters to its party equal to or greater than 0.1% of those who voted for governor in an electoral district during the last gubernatorial election. And two, a minor party must win at least 1% of the vote for at least one partisan office in the district where it has minor party status in every general election. This is key because every...
Senator Brand.
Question. Can you just give a rough estimate of what that means in terms of actual numbers?
Well, it depends on the district you're talking about. If you're talking about a statewide political party,
mm-hmm.
you're talking about 10,000 votes. I got 2% of the vote when I ran for governor, and I got about 20,000 votes, give or take a little bit. More exact numbers, I think Scott could probably give you back there, but that's pretty close.
Okay.
If you're like the Socialist Party and you only have status in the 3rd Congressional District, the numbers are a little bit less.
Okay.
But see, this is the this is going to be what I'm going to focus on in a second. You have to win 1% of the vote. Now, why do minor parties want the status? They get two things. They get a checkoff box on voter registration cards, and they get the ability to nominate candidates to the general election ballot by holding a nominating convention instead of by petitioning. The problem with the current law is that all minor parties, even those which have established a significant voter base, are forced to run candidates in partisan races to meet the 1% requirement. Such parties, like the Pacific Green and the Libertarians, regularly win more than 1% of the vote anyway. But since survival is at stake, and no one wants to put all their eggs in one basket, minor parties run candidates in every partisan race they can. Some minor party candidates, particularly in statewide races, run for the sole purpose of maintaining minor party status. Such candidates waste voter time, taxpayer dollars, and serve to maximize the potential for so-called spoiler candidates. Senate Bill 777 makes one significant change. The bill exempts a minor party from the requirement that it win 1% of the vote if it has a registered base of 0.5% of the electorate in that district. The premise behind this bill is that any party which has registered that many voters has proven that it has a level of support sufficient to justify its continued existence as a minor party. Minor parties which have not registered 0.5% of the electorate would still have to perform at the ballot box, since this is the only other way to show support. Because Senate Bill 777 allows minor parties with a significant base of registered voters to retain its ballot status, they will no longer field candidates for the sole purpose of retaining ballot status. Fewer such candidates will save tax money through reduced voters' pamphlet and ballot printing expenses. Fewer such candidates will make it easier for voters to focus on active campaigns. Finally, minor parties will be able to divert more of their candidates and resources toward more winnable nonpartisan campaigns, as I did after I ran for governor. I got elected to the Tuolumne Valley Water District. Senate Bill 777 takes
yeah. In March.
That's right. Senate Bill 777 takes a rational approach benefiting everyone. So, you know, that's my pitch on 777.
Thank you, Richard. Any other questions?
This is Mr.
Any other comments? Okay. What are you guys thinking?
Okay. We got a pair. All right. Post public hearing on 777.
Mr. Chair.
Open the work session on 777.
Move Senate Bill 777 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Byer moves Senate Bill 777 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Let's do it, Mr. Chair. If you have the guts to go against the major forces in Oregon politics, like the Democratic Party of Oregon and the Republican Party.
Oh, so you added a major force in
Oregon. The two of them together.
Looking at the signatures
on the bill, the sponsors. Okay. Any other discussion? Any objection?
Nelson?
Yeah.
Senator Minnis.
Yeah.
Will object. Senator Minnis, have him down as a no vote in that, if you would, please. And with that, bill passes. And Senator Byer, is that you?
Or I think Senator George should carry this bill.
Absolutely.
Sure.
It's his bill.
Yeah.
We should ask.
That's a great idea.
Okay. Senator George will carry it. All right. We'll close the work session and open up public hearing on Senate Bill 747.
For the record, one more time, my name is Richard Burke. I'll just go right into my testimony. Under current law, a minor political party becomes a major political party when one of its candidates for statewide office wins at least 15% of the vote. After doing so, the new major party must register 3% of the electorate to its party within 50 months. Major political parties enjoy many advantages, such as primaries and getting early notice from the media. The problem with current law is that minor parties are incented to run candidates in every statewide race in hoping of reaching the 15% mark. Such was the case with Mitch Schultz's 2000 Libertarian campaign for state treasurer and Lloyd Marbett's 2000 Pacific Green campaign for Secretary of State. Some minor party candidates run only for the purpose of seeking major party status. So, once again, we're wasting voter time, taxpayer dollars, and we're maximizing the potential for so-called spoiler races, which can frustrate Republicans and Democrats. Another problem is that major party status can only be won or lost at the statewide level, not within electoral districts, as is the case with current minor party law. This makes no sense in a state as politically diverse and fragmented as Oregon, where the kind of politics holding appeal in Lane County would hold contempt in Wallowa County, and vice versa. Finally, obtaining major party status by winning 15% of the vote in a single election is not helpful to new parties in the long run. Without a significant registrant base to build an organizational and fundraising infrastructure, no new major party can survive. Granting major party status to a party unprepared to handle it is like giving the keys of a sports car to a toddler. Such was the case when the American Party, when they briefly won major party status after Ross Perot's 20% Oregon vote tally in 1992. The act of chasing major party status causes minor parties to waste their best candidates and resources on races they are unlikely to win instead of the more winnable races. Senate Bill 747 makes two significant changes. The bill eliminates the requirement that a minor party win 15% of the vote in a statewide race. Under this bill, a minor party will become a major party within an electoral district when it has registered 3% of the electorate to its party, as is the current level for maintenance today. As suggested in the last sentence, the bill will also make major party law consistent with that for minor parties. It will be possible to win major party status within an electoral district. Under Senate Bill 747, it will actually become harder for a minor party to achieve major party status. But when they win it, they'll have the voter base to handle it. Rather than riding on the coattails of a Ross Perot or recruiting a famous or wealthy candidate to run, minor parties will have to register large numbers of voters. Having said that, Senate Bill 747 will make it possible to win major party status in an electoral district where they have built a support base large enough to regularly run competitive races. Because Senate Bill 747 gets rid of the 15% vote requirement, minor parties will have no reason to run candidates to seek an arbitrary vote tally threshold. Fewer such candidates will save tax money, and fewer such candidates will make it easier for voters to focus on the active campaigns for statewide office, candidates that are really trying to win. Finally, minor parties will be able to divert more of their candidates and resources toward more winnable nonpartisan campaigns. I think that this bill actually helps everybody. I think this is even better than the last one. I didn't have time to go hunting for co-sponsors because we were up on the deadline with this one, but it's the same basic premise. To give you an idea, the Libertarian Party now has 14,030 registered voters. To get major party status, we'd have to get 57,697. And so it's a very formidable hike, but I think it is one that is healthier for major parties, minor parties, voters, and the taxpayer's wallet.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we will close the public hearing.
Thank you, Senator.
On 747. And you guys, you need to go get some votes. All right. The next three road trips, you've got the information there. We need them back by, what do you say here?
Different dates.
Yeah, they're for different dates. Okay, self-explanatory, pretty color. All right. We're all set up for the Friday trip to Medford. Committee bills. Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Has a committee bill. What do you want to call this thing?
Well, let me tell you what the issue is. Is that helpful? And then I'm asking that the Rules and Redistricting Committee introduce this particular issue as a legislative council draft request. And the issue is that Oregon Statute 496.201 provides that the state of Oregon, through ODF&W, shall provide surplus salmon to specific tribes. And only listed are the Coos, the Cow Creeks, and the Coquille. And the Burns Paiute would like to be listed to access surplus salmon for historical, traditional, and cultural ceremonies. So I'm simply asking for your support, and I will move that we introduce this bill request,
Which group is this?
Proposal as a Rules and Redistricting Committee LC draft request.
Which group is it?
Burns Paiute Tribe. It happens to be located in Colonel Harper's district.
Yeah, and
there are any salmon over there.
They've never seen any salmon.
Right, that's the problem.
Oh, no, they didn't.
How can it be cultural if they've never seen one?
They want it.
Okay, any objection to LC draft request from Senator Brown? Hearing none, it's ordered.
They did answer.
Senator Corcoran.
They did.
Memorial for legislator Peg Jolin. Okay, any objection? Hearing none, it's ordered. And the ballot title process. LC draft.
Whose Hummer is that?
Whose is this?
This is ours.
Well, this is
working on for 6 weeks. Okay, any objections? As a committee LC draft request.
No problem.
Yes.
I want to see the bill.
Yeah, that's right. We want to see what it's doing. Yeah, so does Ted.
This would be a good way to pass one. Just,
yeah.
I'd say it would be. This is a fighter pilot bill. All right. Any other discussion?
Okay.
We are adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.